Winchester Talking Newspaper, the 16th of June 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, and I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. Now, the main headlines this week are no show blow to Bushfield meeting, big revamp for Four Doomed Arcade, and traditional fate making welcome return. May we have the story behind the first headline, please? Heather.
No show blow to Bushfield meeting. The developers pulled out of a public meeting to discuss plans for a former military base on the outskirts of Winchester. They had been due to share their latest ideas for a business park at Bushfield Camp with Badger Farm Parish Council, and the meeting opened to the public. But the Parish Council was told at late notice that a key member of the development team was unable to attend for personal reasons. In a statement, the Parish Council said that the Parish Council were extremely disappointed that the scheduled presentation on Monday, June the 12th, with Mr. Cripps Lapser, Osborne, and Miss Nikki Davis, marketing, was cancelled at the last minute. The meeting would have provided an opportunity for the residents and parish councillors to gain a full understanding of the extent of the proposed development and the impact, both positive and negative, on Badger Farm residents, neighbouring parishes, and Winchester as a whole. The meeting has not been rescheduled at this moment, but will go ahead with just our residents so the parish council can gauge public opinion. We will talk to the developers to rearrange a full meeting as soon as possible, and details will be available on our parish council page, website, www.badgerfarmpc.gov.uk. That's www.badger-farm-pc.gov.uk, and on the parish notice boards. A planning application to the City Council is expected in the autumn. The council meeting on Monday was attended by around 35 members of the public, and it heard of concerns over traffic and the four-storey height of potential student accommodation hotel. The Bushfield site is likely to be development as part of the campus earmarked for business use in the current local plan drawn up around 10 years ago. City Councillor Brian Laming said, "Well, I'm very disappointed. A lot of people were taking the trouble to get to the meeting. Quite a large number have concerns, judging by the emails I've been getting, and very few people like it." A spokeswoman for the developers said they were looking to reschedule the meeting. The City of Winchester Trust, Preservation Watchdogs, has raised Bushfield in their latest newsletter. Chairman Keith Lehman said, "We are monitoring the progress on Bushfield Camp. Still very concerned about the design and the scale of the outlined proposals we have seen so far. We think that the introduction of 2,000 and more people to be employed, together with their transport requirements, plus the current use, plus possible bicycle routes, will lead to human saturation of the whole area. And this, we think, could easily destroy what is currently part of Winchester's setting." Councillor Laming echoed these concerns. He said, "People's main concerns include that this area has over the last 50 years naturally rewilded. So creating a major wildlife haven and corridor, it acts as a green lung on this side of the city, a natural extension to Whiteshoot Ridge Environmental Project. The whole area is used by many people from all over the city. Traffic and public safety is a major concern, as St Cross Roundabout is frequently at saturation point many times a day. It can take 50 minutes to travel in from Otterbourne or Twyford to the hospital. I've been told that ambulances, fire engines or police have great difficulty in getting through the traffic in emergencies. There's no alternative route for them to access large area of the city and hospital, including emergency transfers. Only 800 to 900 car parking places are suggested for 3,000 employees. The suggestion is that they're to use the nearby park and ride. The City Council wants people to use these spaces to reduce the number of cars entering the city. Today, it is averaging 70% capacity, leaving only 264 free spaces. These are fully utilised, particularly for major events, which bring business into the city.
Thank you. Over to you, Noel, for the second headline story,
which is Big Revamp for Doomed Arcade. Work has started to revive a Winchester City Centre shopping arcade that in the longer term is likely to be demolished as part of the Silver Hill scheme. The City Council is sprucing up King's Walk to make it more attractive to passers-by at a cost of £385,000. The upgrade includes integrating the Nutshell Theatre with the King's Walk arcade, improving the appearance of the facade and entrance along Silver Hill, and enhancing existing open spaces. Lighting will be improved and the exterior has been painted. The scheme was agreed last year as a meanwhile use before the 1970s building is swept away as part of Central Winchester Regeneration Scheme, better known as Silver Hill. The City Council does not want to spend a large amount of money on a building that is proposed for demolition under the plans being drawn up by the Council's development partner, Jigsaw Consortium. But councillors are also aware of the recent worsening of antisocial behaviour in the area, which recently saw the Turkish Tailor being targeted. The improvement work also includes improved and consistent signage and wayfinding throughout King's Walk, new illuminated shop signage, and improvements to the lighting, new planters and planting around the Middlebrook Street and Silver Hill entrances, as well as in the new courtyard area, repainting of brickwork and replacement of doors to the rear entrances of shops. With rising costs due to inflation, a couple of ideas were dropped earlier this year. The former post office unloading bay in Tanner Street was earmarked as an outdoor performance space, and the rooftop of Middlebrook Street offices was going to be brought back into use with its striking views across the city. Both ideas were considered as attractive but not value for money when the building will be knocked down at some future point.
Thank you. Over to you, Margaret, for the third headline story, please.
A traditional fete making welcome return. After its successful return post-COVID in 2022, the traditional St Cross fete returns later this month. First held in 1868 until the pandemic, the fete had only ever been interrupted before by World War I and World War II. It will again be held in the grounds of the Medieval Hospital of St Cross on Saturday, 24th of June. Entertainment will be provided by the Winchester Morris Men, First Chandler's Ford Boys Brigade Band, Ukulele Band and Punch and Judy. All the other traditional attractions have returned, including stalls, a fun fair, train rides, teas, homemade cakes and ice cream. Jill Beck, the fete secretary, said, "The fete is a wonderful community event and we are thrilled to be holding it again. We look forward to welcoming visitors to the fete from far and wide. This year, money is being raised for Winchester Women's Refuge and the Wildfire Youth Project, a new charity supporting youth workers in schools and churches. And this is accompanied by a picture of St Cross with the Morris dancers there. And underneath it says that St Cross Fete is one of the oldest events of its kind in England."
Thank you, and that concludes the headline stories for this week. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Belgarum diary, editorial comment, and first person. And we'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Bridges. David Kenneth Bridges, peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 55. Graham, Richard Graham, oh sorry, it's Keel. Keel, Richard Graham Keel, aged 76. Jen, Edna Olive Jen, of Home Rise House, Winchester. Mealing, Peter Timothy Tim Mealing, at home. Rickman, Trevor Ernest James Rickman, peacefully at home, aged 91. And finally, Witherington, Mary Pauline Witherington, peacefully in her sleep at St Catherine's Care Home in Winchester. Now it's time for Christian comment. Over to you, Heather.
The Reverend Philip Crinks writes about new life. Do you have a spiritual life? If so, what's it like? Many of us start our spiritual life by beginning a search. We search for something greater than ourselves, for a God, or something or someone we can put absolute trust in. One day, one way of looking at our spiritual life is that that is how it always remains. We are always seekers, always searching, learners, finding new things, and there is an element of truth in that. We never finish our searching and learning about God. We cannot do that in this life. There are limits built into our human condition. Nevertheless, there is something one could call spiritual maturity. Spiritual maturity is, without having everything worked out, making the decision to place our trust in Him, in that God who is ultimately greater than us. An element of that maturity is an acknowledgement of what Iris Murdoch called the sovereignty of good. She meant that there exists an absolute goodness by which we may all be inspired and towards which may all seek to move. This goodness is also ultimately the criterion by which who we are and what we do should be evaluated, and this sovereignty is part of what Christians call the kingdom of God. Paradoxically, this spiritual maturity is one which rejuvenates us. When we acknowledge the sovereignty of good, when we see something of what God's kingdom is like, we experience a kind of spiritual rebirth. Famously, this is what Jesus tells Nicodemus, an established spiritual teacher of his day, who comes to him in secret to challenge him. No one can see the kingdom of God without being born from above, Jesus says. Nicodemus points out that he's already been born once, thank you very much, but he's misunderstood. Spiritual maturity brings fresh insight, a new vision of God's kingdom, of his sovereignty, a completely new life, a spiritual rebirth. New insight brings us a wonderful freedom, a wonderful safety, a real salvation. It is also challenging because it means letting go of our trust in ourselves, of our confidence in our worldly wisdom, of many things in which we previously felt confidence. We come to recognize and to accept our limitedness before the vast power and limitlessness of God. The wind blows where it chooses, and you hear the sound of it, but you do not know where it comes from or where it goes. And so it is with everyone who is born of the Spirit, Jesus says. Our faith in God is faith in a God whose goodness we trust in, whose action is always for our benefit. In Jesus' preparedness to give up his life for us in our imperfection, we see the depth of that love. For Christians, this is a unique revelation of the nature of God. It is to Nicodemus that Jesus explains how God's love is such that he has given his only Son, so that we may put our trust in him and not lose our chance at fullness of spiritual life, but have it and keep it in all eternity. Do you have a spiritual life? If so, what is it like?
Thank you. We'll continue with letters to the editor. And if you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. There are 9 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, a letter from Ingrid Bond, headlined Excellent Care. There appear to be some glitches in communication at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. One member of staff said that there had been a reorganisation in the administration department and cracks were beginning to show. A more senior member of staff said it was chaos, a mess. Nevertheless, I finally had my operation on June the 8th and had excellent medical care, thank you. My thanks too to the following: Helen, who glided quietly and efficiently in Bartlett Ward, attending to all our needs, the chefs proving such a good choice of menu. I particularly liked their soups, nothing wishy-washy about them, especially the cumin and cauliflower, and the potato and cheese pie, whilst not easy to present beautifully, was so tasty and easy to slip down a sore throat. And last but not least, the lady in the coffee and cream outfit who dusted round and about us and mopped under us with a cheery word or two. Ingrid Bond, New Road, Littleton.
And this is a letter from Tony Gardner. Laugh out loud. Much as I appreciate reading Simon Lever's weekly correspondence on the letters page, giving us all the benefit of his opinions on anything and everything, I have to say I was highly amused to see him being taken to hand on solar farms by a better informed 11-year-old Ralph Perrett last week, letters June the 8th. Good luck to you, Ralph, and thanks for giving me a real laugh, one loud moment. Long live the letters page. Tony Gunner, Church Lane, Cauldon Common.
Andy Smith writes about repair delays. Just how long does it take to repair, resurface a stretch of pavement? Mm-hmm. 6 weeks minimum if it's Chilbolton Avenue. It can't help that the work is squeezed into just a few hours every day, with much time wasted setting up and removing bollards and temporary traffic lights. It's tempting to draw a comparison with China, where they'd probably build 3 hospitals and a new motorway network at the same timescale. Meanwhile, here in Winchester, pedestrians, drivers and taxpayers alike are left frustrated by the delays and the poor value for money. Who is accountable for the management of this shambles? Asks Andy Smith of Tegdown Meads.
And Ian Tate writes about the medical centre. Your paper recently ran a piece about the City Council's proposals to demolish the Friarsgate Medical Centre and quoted me as saying that this was an utter disgrace. Chronicle, May 25th. The quote is factually correct, however, out of context, and it gives the impression that I am opposed to the loss of this building. That could not be further from the truth. And what I actually said was that it's a disgrace that after over 8 years, the council still can't decide what to do with the site. The term meanwhile use is just weasel words and an excuse to delay making a decision. It would be perfectly possible to submit proposals today for a residential scheme here. I have consistently argued for this over the last 7 years, and the adjoining landowner, St John's Winchester Charity, could well partner with the council so that much-needed new affordable housing could be delivered here. The Silver Hill scheme that was approved by the planning committee was back in December 2014, but then derailed by Winchester Deserves Better campaign, which has left our beautiful city with an eyesore at its heart. Now that is an utter disgrace. Interesting that your correspondent, David Selby, makes reference to the new development in City Road, Mead House. This is Hugh Thomas designed building built to the highest standards and has many plaudits across the city, so possible Mr. Selby is out of kilter with the majority. That said, the 3 bus shelters along that side of the city road add nothing to the street scene, particularly when only one stop is required for operational reasons. Ian Tate, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And here we do have a letter from Simon Lever on about the South Downs National Park. Much has been commented on the exceedingly expensive between the £190 and £210 million intrusion upon the South Downs National Park. There is already a large compound, formerly a greenland, next to Badger Farm Road for construction work to be executed. Highways England promoted and built smart motorways against strong opposition by motoring organisations, which caused deaths by lack of hard shoulder refuge. I personally have no faith in Highways England affording benefits to the national park, considering the massive infrastructure it would require, ultimately infringing upon our precious, beautiful natural parkland. Winnell Mars are literally on the edge of this proposed development. We cannot afford to lose any of the South Downs National Park. Such a beautiful areas can never be replaced. And that's from Simon Lever of Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Peter Innes writes about night parking. Nighttime parking. This is a brilliant idea. Obviously, the intention of the City Council is to use the vast income from these charges directly on the repair of potholes. The outcome will be growth of Winchester's nightlife, because nightlifers will be confident of driving home in the dark without needing to swerve all over the road to avoid damaging their vehicles in potholes. It will then help differentiate between hopefully sober evening motorists who are driving straight and the swerving ones who really do need to be stopped and breathalysed by the police. Benefits for all, says Peter Innes of Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy.
And Robert Craig writes the case for a federal Britain. Mike Morgan, writing to the papers from Hampshire in Over Wessex, asked why England has no national parliament. He says that England is the only country without a parliament, unlike the other countries in the Union. He also suggests that there needs to be a root and branch overhaul of our so-called democracy. The point is that Britain is the most centralised state in Europe, and it's getting worse. Whitehall cannot do everything, and handing over responsibility to private companies is a cop-out. For example, the attempt to micromanage COVID track and trace from London while excluding the local authorities was a shambles. He advocates Britain becoming a federal state like Germany. For that to be viable, England would have to be divided into a number of smaller countries. That is, into Dumnonia, Devon and Cornwall, earlier known as West Wales, the North West, earlier known together with Wales as North Wales, England, the land of the Angles, mostly east of the Pennines, Wessex, West Sex, the land of the West Saxons, including Bedfordshire and East Kent, and Essex, the land of the East Saxons, including West Kent, Hertfordshire and London. On the road to a democratic federal Britain, Dumnonia and Wessex must be nations again. Robert Craig, Priory Road, Weston-super-Mare, Nether Wessex.
Golfing Mag, so this is a letter from Andrew Griffin. I wonder if your readers can help with a bit of detective work. In the 1990s and early 2000s, possibly a bit earlier, Basingstoke Observer / Westminster Press produced a free magazine called Hampshire Golf before ceasing publication in early 2001. I have some copies from my time as editor of Fairway to Green, which launched a Hampshire edition to fill that gap, although one of the sales team, Peter Llewellyn, launched his own publication called Tea Times, which staggered on until 2020. But I digress. What I would really like to know is if anyone has kept a set of the Hampshire Golf magazines. I am contemplating writing a book on the history of Hampshire Golf's championships and players. With the early 1890s, we are the oldest county golf union in England and are 130 years old now. If possible, I would happily acquire a set of as many copies as exist today, or certainly would have the opportunity to do some research based on them. The other thing I would be keen to know is, if there are any of the photos that would have been taken for the mag in the 1990s. The Hampshire Telegraph is probably the oldest weekly paper that would have carried reports and possibly photographs, and I know that you can access them that through the British Newspaper Library's online archive. Ironically, Basingstoke, as a club, has only ever produced one Hampshire, Isle of Wight and Channel Islands amateur champion, Jeff Foden, back in 1971. I'm not sure if the championship will come to the revamped Basingstoke club at Dummer. That would be a conversation for the executive when the works are completed. But they do occasionally do one-offs for special anniversaries. Not sure when the original club was founded, but sure someone will think along those lines at some point. Thanks for reading, and any light you can shed on the above would be gratefully received. Email andrew.griffin4@googlemail.com. andrew.griffin4@googlemail.com. And that's from Andrew Griffin of Miller Drive, Fareham.
Eileen Berry writes, having a laugh. In a light-hearted way, I would just like to mention that my relationship with the Hampshire Chronicle goes way back to the early 1970s. In 1977-8, I organised street entertainment. In those days, the Chronicle had many young reporters and about three photographers. The fun part of this letter still makes me laugh today. We organised a drum and bugle band of young men, around 30 of them, to open the event. The then mayor said she agreed to open it from the Guildhall steps, and the Green Jackets gave a fanfare, so there we were. All my friends from the Chronicle and the photographer. The band beautifully paraded around King Alfred's statue and had instructions to stop for the mayor to make her speech and then go on. But to my amazement, they never stopped. The fanfare went off, and so did the band, with the drums banging away. The mayor shouted, "Well, do something." I took off my high heels and ran by the side of them as they paraded up the high street. I literally had to stand in front of the young bandmaster to make him stop and get him to proceed around the back street onto the main high street again, where they once more paraded around King Alfred's statue. There's me with my high heels in my hand, holding my breath as the young man finally came to a halt. He seemed to be overwhelmed by the occasion. Anyway, up he comes with his band and his trumpets going. The mayor still stood there and said, "Now that was a good trial run." The Chronicle boys were almost on their knees laughing. I said to them, don't you dare print this. Bless them, I have to say, yes, it was funny to a lot of people, but a lot of people didn't see anything wrong. In the evening, we all went to our favourite pub, and the Chronicle boys were there. They actually made me see the funny side of that event, and it's never been forgotten. What loyalty, they never printed a word about it. You really have to take the rough with the smooth and rise above it, and I did it with a smile. Eileen Berry, Priorstean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Thank you, and that was the last contribution from our readers. Thanks for everyone who contributed. Noel's now going to read an alternative look at the news because he's got Belgarum Diary.
Yes, I've got three items, two really exciting. Two University of Winchester experts hunting for a submarine believed to be buried in a park may have found more than they expected. As previously reported, Simon Roffey and David Ashby were hoping to find traces of a First World War submarine when they travelled to Dartmouth. The pair employed the university's ground penetration radar, GPR, in a corner of the town's Coronation Park, which is believed to be the last resting place of the submarine E-52. Simon and David believe that the GPR revealed outlines of what could be the submarine, but their investigations in the park and adjoining canoe and dinghy storage area also showed another shape, which is thought to be a German torpedo boat, also from the First World War. The positions of the boats correspond with an aerial photograph of Dartmouth in the 1920s, which shows the submarine and another craft sitting on the mudflats. the vessels were used as breakwaters. The university's GPR, which can send sound pulses through concrete and tarmac, produced images of two large objects lying about a metre beneath the surface. However, Simon said the results were not definite, not definitive, and now he and David plan to return to Dartmouth at a later date with magnetometry equipment. Simon added, the submarine under the park could make a wonderful tourist attraction if we could identify its exact location. And then there's a slightly out of date one, diversions in opposite directions, but it's still funny. Winchester motorists have been left confused by a pair of conflicting diversion signs. The signs are located at the Bridge Street mini roundabout leading to Chesil Street and Magdalen Hill and divert traffic in two different directions. One of the diversions is in place from March until November the 30th, taking drivers from Kingsgate Road to Garnier Road. It's not known why the diversion is in place. The other diversion, which was in place due to surface treatment work, was being enforced from June the 7th to June the 9th. It led from Petersfield Road to Alsford Road. Winchester County Council has been contacted for comment. I think also that Garnier Road was a bit closed as well. Anyway, Winchester Dock does his bit in Turkey relief work. Dr. Simon Struthers, a Hampshire hospital consultant, has been providing emergency relief as part of a UK government tasked response to the recent earthquake in Turkey. Dr. Simon Struthers, a consultant paediatrician at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester and at Andover War Memorial Hospital, was among an initial UK Med emergency team who reached the scene just 3 days after the earthquake struck. Simon spent just under a month treating those who had suffered injuries from the earthquake, those who were formerly receiving care in the city's hospital, as well as seeing two first responders needing assessment. Colleagues at Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust worked to ensure Simon's shifts were covered for weeks ahead at the Winchester and Andover hospitals to enable his release for the response. Simon forms part of UK Med's register of over 1,000 NHS and international doctors, nurses, paramedics, logisticians and other allied non-health professionals who are highly skilled in emergency work, a register that exists to provide an on-call system for emergency global health relief. UK Med CEO David Whitewick said, without the support of Simon and his colleagues, UK Med could not perform its life-saving work. Simon selflessly put up his hand to support the immediate aftermath of the earthquake. He worked in difficult circumstances to help those in need. We're grateful to him and all our staff who give up their time to aid people affected by war and disaster.
It's time for editorial comment, and Margaret's going to read it.
The long story of a former military camp. Bushfield Camp has been gently rotting and returning to nature for the best part of 50 years. The landowner, the church commissioners, always harboured ambitions to develop at least part of the site. In recent months, they have been consulting the public over ideas for the land, including a business park and also student accommodation and or a hotel. Most of the site would be retained as chalk downland. Public concerns are growing about the scale of the plans, with dozens attending a parish council meeting in Badger Farm on Monday evening. But make no mistake, Bushfield Camp is almost certain to be developed. The City Council around a decade ago earmarked it in the local plan as a site for a business park. The Chronicle reported on this at the time, but there was little public interest. Designated land for future development at some point in the future in a planning document is too vague for most people to get excited about. Now the planning application is being prepared for the autumn, and the public will soon see exactly what is proposed. The problem is that by the time the crunch decision is made over exactly what is to be built, it will be too late to fight the principle that the site will be developed.
It's time for, First Person, that's right. It's by Joanna Lewis. And Heather, you're going to read it.
Kingdom of the Porkers, writes Joanna Lewis. Why do embarrassing incidents in public always seem to come in threes? First was the conference last week. I was in full swing in my new role as director of one of LSE's centres and had diligently gone over my talk on the train. But as I confidently announced I was moving on to point three and turned to the next page, there was no next page. So there was no point three or four, a nightmare. Next, the drinks reception. When the much respected and loved professor of a major study on health began to raise a toast to staff, suddenly she was drowned out by the noise of glass smashing. Yours truly had turned around to get a better look and knocked the display over, a cascade of wine glasses. Awkward. I should have realised then that my first visit to the opera, an obvious source of acute social anxiety and therefore blind panic, was unlikely to be incident-free. Was I destined to be punished by letting the side down by going to hear Cosy Fan Tutti at the Grange Festival on Saturday? It's held in the former mansion of the Baring family near Itchinstoke. It nestles, despite its imposing facade, in a sweeping, verdant Hampshire valley, jaw-droppingly beautiful and sublime in its bucolic, timeless and serene calmness. That was until I raced through the grounds, perched perilously on the back of a golf buggy, having 1 minute to get inside before it started. Not being in the know, I'd used my sat-nav, and that had taken me to a deserted estate farm miles away. I was totally lost and overwhelmed by agricultural stuff. Thank goodness the estate manager, by complete chance, appeared in a small truck. I was near weeping and sweating bullets. He took pity on me and escorted me to main entrance. Thank you, Mel. With no time for a shoe change or an eye makeup redo, I was probably the only person there in green Adidas trainers and looking like a panda. Still, I'd turned up wearing trousers. I say that because thanks to having COVID again, yes, again, we have lost a few pounds here round the middle. What a difference that makes. More energy, the lighter step, and increased confidence. The joy at being able to wear more than an eighth of your wardrobe. Not only was I able to wear my orange flares for the first time, but in the interval I didn't have to worry about rivaling the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra's wind section when I stood up. And that reminds me, what I noticed that evening was not just the ludicrous amount of seriously posh people, retired MPs and crimson velvet milling around. There was a significant lack of obesity. Maybe the slightly older demographic played a part, and the higher socio-economic income bracket. But one thing is likely. This is not a group who regularly ate fast food. Elsewhere, obesity is at crisis level, especially amongst young people. We are now both looking like and walking like Americans, on legs made of deep-fried chicken, pizza dough and extra fries. The phenomenal spread of fast food outlets, home deliveries and unregulated TV advertising needs addressing. So good on Michael Gove for creating a planning culture that is starting to intervene. Last week, councillors blocked a new Papa John's outlet in Tyneside because of nearby levels of childhood obesity. But that's only a start. Fast food should be treated like cigarettes, with an age limit, high taxation and no advertising. Let's see coloured posters of a fatty liver, a damaged heart or ravaged kidneys. Likewise, excess sugar consumption is increasingly linked to rising levels of dementia and cancers. Fast food has a lethal, inbuilt addictive element and little nutritional value, so you feel hungry again very quickly. It has become unrestrained like an elasticated waistband, and it's time to pull it in.
Lighting up time. On Friday the 16th of June, it ends at 4:50 a.m. and begins at 9:22 p.m. On Wednesday the 21st of June, it ends at 4:50 a.m. and begins at 9:24 p.m. We'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, libraries geared up for Loneliness Awareness Week. Hampshire residents have the opportunity to take part in a variety of upcoming activities during Loneliness Awareness Week. This week, the Hampshire County Council, HCC, Library Service is holding a range of activities where people can meet others, develop new skills, and improve their well-being. Some examples of the services include the Chatabout scheme, which offers welcoming spaces where people can meet and talk. During this scheme, specially trained staff will introduce people into a group to have a private conversation or to signpost support for anyone needing help. There will also be read aloud groups where you can sit back and listen to library staff read aloud for 30 minutes. Councillor Steve Foster, HCC Cabinet Member for Education, said our libraries are about so much more than just borrowing books. They serve as vibrant community hubs, providing a safe and inviting environment for people to connect, unwind and learn. At Hampshire Libraries, there is something for everyone, with events and activities to suit all ages, many of which are offered free of charge. Whether it's educational classes, courses, book clubs, singing sessions, or story time for babies and toddlers, there are many options to explore. For people who can't get to the library due to ill health, a disability or caring responsibilities, there is also the Home Library Service, where books are delivered to your home on a regular basis. There are also volunteering opportunities at different libraries and free Wi-Fi available. Councillor Liz Fairhurst, HCC Cabinet Lead Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, said, "Loneliness can affect anyone, regardless of age, and can have a serious impact on mental and physical well-being. Connecting with others can help address this issue, and our libraries offer a space where this can take place. If you or someone you know is experiencing feelings of loneliness or isolation, I strongly encourage visiting your local library or exploring their online resources to discover the options available."
Budget flyer putting airport routes at risk. Southampton Airport is at the centre of a row between two rival airlines flying the same routes on the same days. Budget airline EasyJet has been accused of going head-to-head with Loganair in a move that could threaten the future of important but less profitable routes. It comes after EasyJet unveiled plans to fly from Southampton to Glasgow from October the 29th. Loganair fears spiralling competition could jeopardise the viability of some of its year-round services, potentially resulting in flights not being available when people need them. A return trip from Southampton to Glasgow, travelling out on Saturday, November the 4th, and returning on Thursday, November the 9th, will cost around £100 on Loganair. Flying with EasyJet the same trip on the same dates will set travellers back around £64. EasyJet recently scrapped two of its routes from Liverpool John Lennon Airport. The airline said, "We concentrate our efforts on maintaining and developing routes which prove most popular with customers, focusing on offering routes with the greatest demand." Posting on social media, Loganair's chief executive, Jonathan Hinkles, listed four routes the company operates between Scotland and other parts of the UK. He added, "Over the last couple of years, the UK's largest loss-making low-fare airline has started up competition on each of these routes and then hastily pulled off again. I fully expect that Southampton-Glasgow will be added to that list. Shouldn't we be happy about this? No, not really. For as long as this lasts, it has the potential to damage consumer choice. We fly all these routes throughout the whole year, yet we need to make a profit on busy summer Thursdays to ensure the service remains available on quieter wintry Tuesdays." Mr. Hinkles claimed that services could dwindle to the handful of days and times when both airlines can fly viably, if the current trend continued. EasyJet responded by saying it offered more domestic connectivity than any other airline in the UK. It added, "We are always reviewing the opportunity to operate new routes where we see there is demand and can offer competitive fares, which, along with providing greater choice, we believe is good for consumers." Southampton Airport declined to comment.
Bus ticket prices change. Stagecoach has announced updated ticket prices set to take effect from Sunday, June the 18th. That's this Sunday, isn't it? From this Sunday. The announcement brings a mix of news for bus commuters, with some fares rising to accommodate increased operational costs, while others are being reduced to provide customers with more affordable travel options. One of the biggest changes is the reduction in price for the widely used Day Rider Gold ticket, which covers stagecoach travel across Hampshire, Surrey and West Sussex. And that ticket will cost £1.10 less, so it will only cost £8 now. In addition to the price changes, Stagecoach will be introducing new ticket options tailored specifically for young people. Now, for the rest of us, single and return ticket prices are staying the same. Single fares are capped at £2 under the government's national travel campaign. Day rider tickets stay the same or they'll be cheaper. But night rider tickets will cost 20 pence more. Flexi 5 tickets are the best value to customers who only travel occasionally. You save 20% on the cost of each. Day rider, mega rider, week and period tickets will see a price increase, and extra direct debit tickets remain the best value for customers travelling every day. So extra direct debit tickets remain the best value for customers travelling every day.
Helping Hand for Community Pantry. New volunteers gave up their time for free at a community pantry serving hundreds of households as part of the Big Help Out. Unit 12's Community Food Pantry in Winnell embraced the recent opportunity to recruit new volunteers. People put themselves forward and discovered firsthand what it's like to help out at one of Winchester's busiest community projects. The food pantry, run by community interest company Unit 12, has more than 900 households who are registered members, with more than 300 households shopping at the pantry each month. The aim is to provide people with a week's worth of shopping for just £5, in addition to a selection of items such as fresh veg, bread and other short-life products donated by supermarkets. Volunteer Director and City Councillor John Tippett Cooper said hundreds of families per month shop at the food pantry, and not only do they get a good range of food for their £5, they get a caring and friendly welcome from Lara and a team of amazing volunteers. And there's a picture of the volunteers smiling with Lara Tarrant, who is the manager, and with John Tippett Cooper.
Vote for your favourite cafe. You can now nominate your favourite cafe to win the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser's Cafe of the Year 2023. Do you know the best barista or the perfect pastry maker? Whatever your reason, we want to hear from you. Nominate your favourite cafe and they could win this prestigious prize. You can nominate your favourite cafe by completing the Hampshire Chronicle form in the Hampshire Chronicle by July the 30th. Once the nominations have closed, we will then publish the top cafes as chosen by readers of the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser, along with a voting coupon so that you can vote for your favourite each day. The voting will start in the week commencing August the 14th. To make your nomination, visit hampshirechronicle.co.uk Cafe of the Year, or complete the form printed in the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser. Last year's winner was Dish Deli and Kitchen in Romsey, co-owned by Mike and Rach Hedges. They said, "We are thoroughly thrilled and honoured to have won the Hampshire Chronicle and Romsey Advertiser Cafe of the Year for the second year running. We would like to thank all our lovely customers who took time to vote for us. We wouldn't be here without you. And another big thank you to every member of our team who work hard every day to serve the people of Romsey and beyond."
Motorway pile-up driver ignored slow down please. A Mercedes driver ignored his passenger's pleas to slow down moments before ploughing into two cars and injuring 12 people on the M3. Ashley Paul had been driving at speeds of up to 100 miles an hour after consuming nitrous oxide. Travelling northbound between Junction 8 and 9, the now 37-year-old crashed into the back of two cars at Winchester, a court was told. Prosecuting, Lucy Taylor said Paul had been driving at 100 miles an hour and had been seen swerving across two lanes before losing control of his vehicle. The passenger in his car recalled fearing for his life, Miss Taylor added. The two vehicles Paul hit were spun around to face the wrong way on the carriageway, while his own Mercedes ended upside down. A total of 12 people were treated at the scene, with the drivers of the other cars describing feeling pain in the neck and back, as well as bruising. The court heard children had been travelling in the cars that Paul struck. Recorder Daniel Sawyer told Paul he was extremely lucky that he didn't kill 11 other people, with those involved only suffering minor injuries. Paul of Yorkshire Road, Merton, London, previously entered a guilty plea to dangerous driving on the grounds that he was not under the influence of nitrous oxide at the time. But at a Newton hearing in May, it was ruled otherwise. It was also ruled that on the day of the crash, August the 16th, 2022, Paul had been travelling at 100 miles an hour, despite some witnesses alleging speeds of 140 miles an hour. Mitigating, Ice Thompson said her client was remorseful about his behaviour, adding, "It's clear the driving was excessive and the speeds were problematic." She added that Paul, who works as a steward, is of good character and is somewhat of a safe driver. Recorder Sawyer said, "You don't go from being a perfectly safe driver to driving like this." He jailed Paul for 18 months and disqualified him for driving for 3 years, extended for 9 months to take into consideration the time he will spend in custody. Recorder Sawyer added, I beg your pardon, that was extended for... I don't quite understand what I've just read to you, so I hope you've done better than I do, but I'll read it again just in case. Recorder Sawyer jailed Paul for 18 months and disqualified him for driving for 3 years, extended for 9 months, to take into consideration the time he'll spend in custody. Recorder Sawyer added, "You decided to risk the lives of your passengers and other road users around you. If you had caused death, you would be facing a much more serious charge. It is sheer dumb luck that you are not facing any of those. Your passengers were pleading with you to slow down, and you just ignored that. You made a deliberate decision to ignore the laws of the road. You showed sheer disregard for the lives of others."
Help on hand over holidays. Families across Hampshire have been reassured their children will receive free meals and other support over the upcoming school holidays. Hampshire County Council, HCC, and holiday club providers are preparing for Holiday Activities and Food, HAF, programme where support will be given to vulnerable school-aged children over the summer. Free places are available for those on benefits-related free school meals, children with special educational needs, and other vulnerable groups such as refugee children. Funded by the Department for Education and delivered by HCC, the HAF programme will take place over 140 sites across the county. The programme will partner with local clubs, community groups, art associations and larger holiday club providers. Councillor Edward Herron, HCC Cabinet Member for Children's Services, said the HAF programme has brought tremendous benefits to many vulnerable Hampshire children and their families over the past 12 months. Our children's services teams have worked extremely hard to bring together local businesses, charities, schools and a broad range of services from across the county to help ensure that school holidays provide positive opportunities for thousands of children who might not otherwise experience the leisure and learning activities that many families may take for granted. A highlight from the HAF annual report is the contribution of Hampshire CC services, including outdoor learning and education teams.
Free gigs for Refugee Week. Winchester organisations will support those fleeing violence and persecution with a series of free concerts for Refugee Week. Monday, June the 19th to Sunday, June the 25th marks Refugee Week. Ahead of the National Festival, the Theatre Royal in Drury Street, Winchester, hosted a sanctuary concert on Saturday, June the 10th. For Make Music Day on Wednesday, June the 21st, the ARC will host an evening of West African Mandingwe music by multi-instrumentalist Nafwambi Kuate from 7:45 p.m. No booking is required. On the same day, the inaugural conference of the University of Winchester's Sanctuary Network will be held at the West Downs Centre. The event is aimed at schools, colleges and universities that are interested in welcoming people seeking sanctuary. The conference will include workshops and networking, while guest speakers from Schools of Sanctuary, the International Rescue Committee and Refugee Education UK will give presentations. Workshops will include music sessions run by the Creative Director of the University of Winchester Music Centre, Neil Valentine, and Dr. Olu Taiwo, Senior Lecturer in Performing Arts. Closing the week will be a community concert at Winchester Cathedral with more than 150 performers of all ages. The show runs from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Kebab stick nearly cost pet dog its life. A cockapoo who ate three chicken kebab sticks is on the road to recovery and back to his cheeky self following a life-saving operation at a Hampshire animal hospital. Four-year-old Alfie underwent surgery at Linnaeus-owned Anderson Moore's veterinary specialists in Hursley after the kebab sticks pierced his stomach, diaphragm and one of his lung lobes. The tip of one of the sticks was just a few millimetres away from his heart and main chest vessels, which could have resulted in life-threatening bleeding if punctured. Alfie's medical emergency started when he ate some skewers before his owners, Chris and Laura Reeves from Farnborough, were able to stop him. They quickly realised something was seriously wrong when their pet started to be sick. Laura said, "Alfie's more than just a dog to us. He's part of our family, so we were very shocked to discover how much damage the skewers caused. We knew the operation had to be carried out to save him, but we were so worried about the procedure given the possible scenarios, which included Alfie not surviving. However, the Anderson Moores team phoned us as much as they could during the five-hour surgery, and our vet, Juan Carlos, was amazing. Alfie is now back home and completely back to his usual cheeky self. You wouldn't even know what had happened to him. We cannot thank the team at Anderson Moores enough." Juan Carlos Sandoval, a resident in small animal surgery at Anderson Moores, operated on Alfie with Alison Moores, consultant in soft tissue surgery, and fellow small animal surgeon Kate Holroyd. Mr. Sandoval said it was a lengthy and complex procedure to remove the three sticks and repair the damage to the pierced tummy, diaphragm and lung lobe. Nevertheless, the surgery went really well, and Alfie was discharged 5 days later. The operation actually took place on Alfie's fourth birthday, so he obviously had to skip any celebrations at the time, but he has since been able to enjoy it properly.
Britain's most dangerous plant seen in Hampshire. Giant hogwood, a toxic plant that can cause extreme blistering, ulcers and blindness, has been sighted in Hampshire. The plant continues to spread across the UK. The deadly plant has been reported in the county going back nearly 100 years. According to the Royal Horticultural Society, giant hogwood is a close relative of cow parsley, originally from southern Russia and Georgia, and it can reach over 3 metres or 10 feet in height. It is a potentially invasive plant, and the sap can cause severe skin burns. It is widely distributed in the wild and poses a serious risk to people who are unaware of its potential for harm. The sap contains a chemical called furocoumarin, which makes the skin sensitive to the sun, which can cause bad blistering. The blistering can even recur over the span of months or even years. The Woodland Trust outlines the appearance of giant hogwood so that you can better identify the dangerous plant. The stems are green with purple blotches and stiff white hairs. The stems are hollow with ridges and a thick circle of hair at the base of each leaf stalk. The leaves are huge and can measure up to 1.5 metres wide and 3 metres long, and are often divided into smaller leaflets. The Woodland Trust compares them to rhubarb leaves with irregular and jagged edges, with the underside of the leaf being described as hairy. The flowers of the giant hogwood appear in June and July and are small and white and appear in clusters on umbrella-like heads that face upwards. The seeds are dry, flattened and an oval shape, almost 1 centimetre long, and tan in colour with brown lines. If you accidentally get giant hogwood sap on your skin, Healthline says that you should wash the area with mild soap and cool water as quickly as possible. You should keep the skin covered when you are outside to protect it from sunlight. If a rash or blister begins to form, you should seek medical attention. Your treatment will depend on how severe your reaction is. Skin irritation that's caught early might be treated with a steroid cream and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs such as ibuprofen to relieve pain, Healthline explains. It adds, severe burns could require surgery to graft new skin over damaged skin. It adds that the giant hogwood sap can damage more than your skin. If the sap gets in your eyes, you can experience either temporary or permanent blindness. Breathing in sap particles can also result in respiratory problems.
Weekend of Rail Nostalgia. The Watercress Line is giving visitors the chance to step back in time with a weekend of 1930s and 40s nostalgia. The Heritage Railways, Oresford and Ropley stations will host the New Year event, remembering the contrasting times of the 1930s glitz and wartime 1940s. On Saturday, June the 17th and Sunday, June the 18th, Winston Churchill and the Queen Mother reenactors will make VIP appearances and mingle with the crowds. Guests are encouraged to dress up in period costumes to soak up the atmosphere, enjoy jive music and swing-era tunes, explore the vintage stalls, view vintage vehicles like war bikes, and learn more about military history and life in the 1940s. Unlimited travel on the attraction steam trains will be available all weekend. Passengers can stop for a picnic or refreshments at the Tea Junction or West Country Buffet and Beer Tent. Music and dancing from the 1930s and 1940s will take over the railway, with tunes from That's Jive and singers Stephanie Bill and Lindsay Shaw. New for this year's event is the added bonus of evening entertainment, capturing the glamour of vintage travel, which is available to book separately. The Watercress Line's interim CEO, Rebecca Daly, said the 30s and 40s is a compelling time for nostalgia. It is a time when all long-distance travel was by train, and the Watercress Line is the perfect place to soak up that atmosphere surrounded by the reenactors.
City Centre ban for habitual offenders. An habitual offender has been banned from parts of Winchester City Centre. Kel Andrews, aged 42, of Highgate Hyde, has a string of offences, mainly for shoplifting from city centre shops. The police have obtained a criminal behaviour order which restricts Andrew's freedom. He is banned from entering the High Street, the Brooks Centre, Sainsbury's on Middlebrook Street and Sainsbury's at Badger Farm. If Andrews fails to abide by the order, he is liable to arrest and could be jailed. It comes after Andrews appeared at Winchester Crown Court to be sentenced to 10 months' imprisonment for a non-domestic burglary, with consecutive sentences of 4 months for theft from shop and 1 month for refusing to provide a sample for Class A drug test. In a Facebook post, the police said officers in Winchester continue to work tirelessly in an attempt to make it difficult for our more prolific offenders from committing crime. Criminal behaviour orders, which replace ASBOs, are orders imposed by the court which restrict where an individual can go, who they may associate with, and what activities they can take part in. Breaching this order is a criminal offence and can lead to a prison sentence. Andrews is a prolific offender in Winchester who's had a detrimental effect on the impact on the livelihoods of residents and businesses. Winchester City Neighbourhood Policing Team have worked alongside colleagues on Response and Patrol and the Criminal Investigation Department to achieve a number of convictions against Andrews for offences including theft, burglary and assault. He is currently serving a prison sentence for a burglary in March. Officers from Winchester City Neighbourhood Policing Team have worked alongside our partners at Winchester BID and Winchester City Council to ensure that something is done to put a stop to his behaviour. Criminals are targeting a small number of shops, including Boots, Tesco and Sainsbury's, and regularly appear before magistrates in Basingstoke. It is the second criminal CBO in recent weeks after one was issued against Christopher Taylor, aged 35, of no fixed abode. Taylor had been involved in repeated criminal behaviour in Winchester City Centre, with 33 convictions for 65 offences including theft, burglary, public order and criminal damage.
The school's in health alert as temperatures soar. Hampshire County Council has urged schools to consider being flexible on uniform rules to help children stay cool during the heatwave. The authority has also suggested that schools adjust the amount of time spent outdoors, whilst also flagging up national advice to consider rearranging school start, finish and play times during the hot temperatures. Climate change is making heatwaves in the UK more likely and more extreme. The County Council has expressed its concerns and advised schools and practitioners to keep children cool during most classrooms, since most classrooms do not have air conditioning to maintain a stable temperature. After asking the County Council what equipment or resources schools have to maintain neutral temperatures, they said that desk or floor-mounted fans could be found in schools to encourage air movement. But overall, the majority of classrooms do not have air conditioning. The council said some more recently constructed or refurbished schools will have individual classroom ventilation units designed to bring in cooler outside air, and some rooms, such as IT spaces, may have comfort cooling to help keep temperatures down. To be prepared for this scorching weather, the county council has issued guidance to schools on how best to cope with high temperatures. Our expectation is that schools and early years settings work in accordance with national guidance on managing hot weather, it said. This includes making sure that children stay well hydrated, apply sun cream and keep to the shade while playing outdoors, as well as managing indoor temperatures safely and effectively. We suggest that individual schools and early years settings consider being flexible in terms of relaxing uniform rules to help children stay cool, and readjusting their time spent outdoors as appropriate. According to the Looking After Children for Teachers and Professionals National Guidance, children under 4 years of age who are overweight or who are taking certain medications are more susceptible to high temperatures because they cannot control their body temperature as efficiently as adults during the hot weather, as they do not sweat as much and so can be at risk of ill health from heat. In line with the guidance, early years settings in schools should open windows as early as possible in the morning before children arrive, or preferably overnight, to allow stored heat to escape from the building.
Fears of play tower spies on neighbours. A new play tower will be installed in the Kingsworthy playground, despite concerns over its height. Kingsworthy Parish Council applied for the tower as part of a replacement project at Eversley Park. Winchester City Council approved the plan at its planning committee meeting on Thursday, May the 24th. Patricia Dowdall spoke in opposition to the tower, saying it was too tall and that the materials were inappropriate. The Holdaway Close resident said, "I wish to emphasise that none of the objectors are against a climbing frame. They simply want something more appropriate to the location. One house has no screening at all, and the trees in question are all deciduous. They've only just come into leaf. This means that for half the year they provide no screen at all. The playground is open 24/7, and after hours older and bigger individuals often use it, especially in the summer. In fact, anyway, anyone who cares can climb it." The Nextdoor website warns that there are frequent thefts from sheds in the area. "I see no point in providing a vantage point for anyone who wants to observe neighbouring houses and gardens. The materials are not compatible with a park environment. They're not even compatible with the already installed equipment, which has a substantial amount of wood in its construction." Colin Crossburn from Kingsworthy Parish Council said, "We ask the committee to approve this. This represents the final part of a major refurbishment. We believe we have taken the necessary steps to reduce the impact on residents." Councillor Jackie Porter, who represents the Worthies on the City Council, said, "I fully support the idea of the village playground. It has grown in size and the collection of play equipment is amazing. However, residents are concerned over the potential impact of the tower. The planning committee agreed to permit a plan, and there is a picture of this very tall tower. Rather interesting." Thank
you. The latest Marwell attraction is a new pair of exotic birds. Marwell Zoo has made a new addition to their family as they welcome a pair of southern caracara. These birds of prey are originally from South America and are known for their high level of intelligence as well as their diverse eating habits, which include carrion, livestock carcasses and live prey like birds and insects. And there's a picture, well, there are several pictures, but they are large, dark-coloured birds with conspicuously lethal-looking beak and a piercing eye, and their legs are really sort of thick and strong looking as well as being long. A distinctive feature of them is their longer legs compared to their falcon relatives. It allows them to be strong runners, so they're going to hunt on the ground chasing their prey. The zoo's Robert Haynes said, "In the wild, these versatile predators are known to exploit many resources to obtain food. So at Marwell, we'll be feeding our two caracara in a variety of ways. So we'll encourage them to display these diverse foraging behaviours to our visitors. They'll be busy investigating their environment all through the day. And to simulate this foraging behaviour, the bird team has inserted pipes into a rocky area near the visitors' viewing windows so they can see the birds as they will drop food down the pipes into the rocks. And so the birds will be searching through those rocks and hunting to uncover their food."
Preschool set to reopen after flood. A preschool which closed after the building was destroyed by a burst water pipe will be reopening under a new provider. Directors of Stepping Stones Preschool in Winnall informed parents that they'd have to find new placements for their children at the beginning of the year due to the unmanageable cost of repairs. 5 months later, Hampshire County Council has confirmed that Dungaroos will be taking over the nursery space at Winnall School, with the plan of opening in September, subject to Ofsted approval. The council will support the nursery provider in gaining a fast-track application for Ofsted registration. Founder Julie Taylor first launched Dungaroos in 2021, opening her first nursery in Hillier Way, Abbots Barton. Ms. Taylor said, "It's a very exciting, and I feel blessed with the opportunity for Dungaroos to provide a much-needed service for early years education in the area. I'm looking forward to seeing this happen." Winchester MP Steve Bryan said, "This is great news for Winnall. Any early years setting is fragile, and it was a huge blow when the previous preschool had to close. I've taken a close interest in this, so I'm delighted Dungaroos is stepping in. It will be brilliant to see it full of children again." Most of the 20 children formerly at Stepping Stones were able to find new places, with those who didn't being supported with stay-and-play sessions. The former nursery was open for 10 years, looking after kids aged 2 to 4, including those with additional needs, and was graded outstanding by Ofsted. Despite parents saying they were willing to fight to keep their kids' nursery alive back in January, the directors said costs of repairs were too great, with flooding over Christmas ruining equipment, furniture and the building itself. The damaged flooring has since been replaced by the City Council, and the facility in Garbett Road should be fit for purpose in September.
Okay.
It will have 34 children per day with 5 staff, so there are several vacancies. Anyone interested in registering their interest in a place at the nursery school should go to dungaroos.uk/.com. Dungarees continues the words dungarees. Sorry. Dungaroos combines the words dungarees and kangaroo, with the nursery believing that both provide a sense of security, nurture, and happiness.
Simple to stay sustainable in the great outdoors. From barbecues to ball games, every outdoor summer activity can impact the environment in some way. Here are some easy ways from the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust to help you help nature this summer. Using reusable or recyclable plates and cutlery. Everyone loves a good picnic or barbecue. Little brings more joy than a delicious meal accompanied by the sounds and sights of nature. Disposable plates and cutlery are an attractive option compared to lugging your entire dinner set to your desired dining spot. However, these items are often designed for single usage, a fact which does not do the environment justice given the contribution of trees and fossil fuels to their manufacture. Instead, try using reusable, lightweight alternatives, such as travel-friendly cutlery and bamboo plates. These last much longer than their disposable counterparts, meaning you save money and the environment. Eco-friendly cooking, whether big or small barbecues, are what makes summer great. However, some outdoor cooking methods can release harmful pollutants into the fresh surrounding air and damage nearby wildlife. Charcoal, though seeming a natural and sustainable fuel for barbecues, is often made from hardwood of tropical rainforests, which are already vanishing at an alarming rate. Mm. The solution? British lumpwood charcoal from sustainable sources such as coppice trees or managed forests. Reduce your electricity consumption. Summer days are brighter, hence we can use less electricity for lighting. Not only will this reduce our reliance on unsustainable fossil fuels, you can also save a great deal on your energy bills. You can also save energy by opening windows to ventilate your house or workplace instead of blasting the air conditioners at full power. Window shutters or blinds also help block strong sunbeams from blazing through windows and intensifying the summer heat. Ditch the car. With summer comes sunshine. This means that travelling between places offers a perfect opportunity to get some vitamin D and much needed fresh air by walking or cycling. It has been proven that exercise and being outside can both boost physical and mental well-being. On top of that, walking and cycling are safer for wildlife and have a much less detrimental effect on the environment than cars. There's a plethora of simple actions we can take to reduce our impact on the environment, while reducing waste production and saving energy are important throughout the year. Our connection with nature through summer walks, seaside visits, or evenings lounging in the garden is particularly evident during summer, strengthening the motivation to do everything we can to protect the irreplaceable beauty of nature.
Top marks for an inspirational church primary school. Sparshot Primary School pupils, there's a picture of about eight of them, each holding a different thing, a musical instrument or a painting. I think there's a model of a Buddha as well, a book, something I don't recognise, and all with beaming smiles. A Hampshire primary school has been praised as an inspirational place for children to learn and staff to work. Following its latest statutory inspection of Anglican and Methodist schools, which is SIAMS inspection, Sparsholt Church of England Primary School was awarded the top grade of excellent. Inspectors spent a day assessing how effective the faith school's distinctive Christian vision is and how leadership is used to enable staff and its 126 children to flourish. The school in Woodman Lane was commended for its Christian teaching, community links, leadership opportunities, and pupils' compassion. The report, published at the end of April, read, "This school is a truly inspiring place to learn and to work. All members of the school community live out the Christian vision with authenticity and kindness. The vision is embedded and effective." Head teacher Elizabeth Hanratty said, "We are extremely proud to have had our achievements recognised in this way and look forward to us continuing and building upon our fantastic work as a church school."
Water relief as the mercury edges close to 30 degrees centigrade. The hot weather has enticed many people to take to the water to cool off in recent days, including a group of rugby players from Southampton who made the most of their visit to Winchester. The Engineers Rugby Club from Southampton University was at the Handlebar Cafe at St Catherine's Hill in Winchester and had a little fun in the river. Although it can seem to be a sensible way to cool off, people should be aware of the danger of entering a body of water as the temperatures rise. Open water can still be cold, which can lead to people going into shock. A yellow heat warning has been issued for Winchester this weekend, with temperatures already reaching 27 degrees centigrade, and on Sunday, the forecast by the Met Office reaches the same maximum temperature of 27 degrees. There is a yellow warning for thunderstorms and an up to 60% chance of precipitation. Those who enjoy hot summer days need not worry. The forecast for the next few days is good, so there is still time to make the most of sunny days in Winchester. And there's a lovely picture of several men, I assume the rugby players, floating on the river on rubber boats with other people sitting around on the side of the water. It looks a bit idyllic to me.
Medic strike disruption. Health bosses have warned of disruption this week for Hampshire's hospitals and emergency departments as junior doctors are set to strike. Junior doctors, who are members of the British Medical Association, are taking part in 3 days of industrial action from 7 a.m. on Wednesday, June the 7th, until 7 a.m. on Saturday, June the 17th. That doesn't sound quite right somehow. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board has confirmed that junior doctors from Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust which runs Basingstoke, Andover and Winchester hospitals, will be participating in the planned strike. Patients with appointments booked on strike days will be contacted by the NHS if their appointment needs to be rescheduled due to industrial action. If you have not been contacted, you should attend your appointment as planned. Dr. Tim Cooper, Joint Chief Medical Officer for the Hampshire and Isle of Wight ICB, said, "No one should put off seeking urgent care in an emergency during the strike action. However, we are urging people to only attend our emergency departments if it is a life or limb-threatening situation. There are a number of alternative services, including pharmacies, urgent treatment centres, Healthier Together and 111 online. By using one of these alternative services, it allows our teams in our emergency departments to attend to those patients who urgently need care and attention. If you have an appointment during the industrial action, then please continue to attend as planned unless you have been contacted to reschedule."
Cathedral Friends get organ insight. Members of Friends of Winchester Cathedral have travelled to Durham to examine restoration work being carried out on the cathedral's organ. The work is being undertaken by Harrison and Harrison, Britain's leading organ builders, which has been overseeing the care of Winchester's organ since the 1930s. The group of friends, all of whom had contributed to the £1 million restoration appeal, were given a tour of the Durham Company's workshops and shown what needed to be done to return the organ to its former glory. The organ had been disassembled into more than 5,000 pieces, including pipes, consoles, pedals, and inner workings, and conveyed to Durham at the end of January. Work will continue until the autumn, when the autumn will be brought back to Winchester and reassembled ready for the end of year services. The organ was originally built by Henry Willis for the Great Exhibition of 1851. On the advice of the cathedral's own organist, S.S. Wesley, the dean and chapter decided to buy the instrument. But when they discovered it was too large for the space available, however, only a portion of the organ was brought to Winchester, with the remaining instead going to America. The project leader at Harrison and Harrison, Owen Woods, was delighted to welcome the friends. He said, "It was a real pleasure to show the friends of Winchester Cathedral around our workshop. It meant a lot to us that the Winchester community is so appreciative of our work and committed to their beautiful building. We look forward to the reinstallation of the Winchester Cathedral organ later this year. The organ restoration appeal for £1.1 million is still ongoing. It has secured 98% of the target, but still needs more."
Choir plans July concert. A choir is preparing for a summer concert in Stockbridge. Chamber choir presented by Southern Voices will be performed in St Peter's Church at 7:30 p.m. on July the 8th. The concert is set to be made up of madrigals, folk songs and jazz, including Little Jazz Madrigals by Bob Chilcott, Songs and Sonnets from Shakespeare by George Shearing, and three Elizabethan part songs by Vaughan Williams. Nicholas Sawley, the head of keyboard at Winchester College, and Alistair Hume, member of the King's Singers, will also be at the performance. The Winchester-based choir's new conductor, Jamal Sutton, will be in charge on the day. Jamal will open the concert with four well-known Elizabethan madrigals, such as "Now is the Month of Maying." Later in the programme, these madrigals are exactly repeated, but this time arranged by Bob Chilcott with a jazz twist.
I'm afraid that concludes all the extracts for this week's Winchester Talking newspaper. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And of course, thanks to today's readers. Thanks to Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful. Thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too. And return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.